Welcome to Connecting with the Toms podcast. I'm your co-host, Julie Tom, a trauma-informed movement specialist.
I'm Dr. Dick Tom, a biological medicine physician. We wish to share the untold truth about health and fitness industry based on our combined 70 plus years of experience. We want you to connect and feel empowered in your own mind and body by interacting with each other.
This show is about connection for you, for us, and for the world. This is Connecting with the Toms podcast. Let's start connecting.
Welcome to another episode of Connecting with the Toms. I'm Julie, a trauma-informed movement coach.
I'm Dr. Tom.
And today we're going to be talking about summer self-care. Summer is soon upon us for us in the Northern Hemisphere. And today we want to talk about things that you can do for yourself during the summer months when your routine tends to fall off track or when you go on holidays. And we want to dive into, you know, like your supplement routine. Should you be taking supplements during the summer? What happens if you get bitten by mosquitoes? And, you know, what are things that you can do for your health in the summer because your routine gets thrown off track? So, Dad, can you tell us what's like your number one thing that you would recommend for somebody when they're knowing that they have summer vacation planned? What do you recommend that they do to help prepare for the routine? Because we know the number two thing that the brain wants, first thing is oxygen, but the number two thing the brain wants is routine. So what do we do to help us manage knowing that we're not going to be on routine during the summer?
Well, I think the obvious is that, you know, when people go on vacation, they sort of let everything go out the window, so to speak, because it's the opportunity that you're not in the same routine, you're not on the same schedule, et cetera. The one thing that typically happens for most people, depending on where you go, is like, oh, I'll have less stress. But let's remember that just because you're not working, you're not in your everyday routine, your stress is the same because your body's interpretation of stress isn't just, you know, about work. That's just more, that's your evident aspect of stress. You know, when we talk about testing your nervous system, the simple thing we do is we have you lie down while we have the band on where we're testing your nervous system, and then we have you stand up. And standing up is the stress. It's like, wow, that's stress. So in other words, the stress is still there. You just don't interpret it. You don't interpret it the same. So preparation for vacation is, I would say, have some level of importance. And that depends where you're going, how you're going, whether you're getting on an airplane, and whether you're flying just across the country or whether you're flying across the ocean, whether you're going east or west. And, you know, so there needs to be the preparation, the mental preparation. And if you're changing time zones, several time zones, then I think there needs to be the aspect of how are we going to reset our circadian rhythm? So, you know, for me to fly, you know, to Europe, for example. So we got 3 hours to the East Coast, or excuse me, like 4 hours to the East Coast, but a 3 hour time zone. And then we got another 5 or 6 hours. So we're looking at an 8 hour, if you go to Italy, or maybe a 10 hour time change. So you got to be thinking about, I need to try and start changing my circadian rhythm in the days before I leave so that I don't get there and, you know, you arrive in the morning, which is, oh, I'm supposed to be going to bed now. Otherwise, you lose the first couple of days of your vacation just trying to adjust your circadian rhythm. So just a couple of things that, you know, I typically have my patients do is to take MagnaReverse, which is a magnesium taurate supplement. We start taking that, you know, literally when you arrive at the airport, literally before you're ready to get on the plane. And then we take it every four hours for however long your plane ride is. Once again, if you're only flying an hour or two, you don't need to do any of this, but I'm talking about multiple time zones, probably to Europe, or if you're going the other way, if you're going to Australia or Japan on vacation, you know, you're changing days even. So, you know, short trips, not an issue. Long trips is an issue. So anyway, we take MagnaReverse. At the airport, we take it 4 hours into the flight. You arrive within another 4 hours or so it's an 8 hour flight. Take it again. And you're trying to set your day so that if you fly overnight, you actually sleep if it's your sleep time. And then when you get there, you actually do your best to stay awake. The other thing we have people take in addition to hangovers is thyroid, a homeopathic, not the medication, homeopathic of thyroid. So maybe a 30K dilution or a 30C dilution, just a couple of pellets. And the combination of the two has, I found with my patients, has done a pretty good job of allowing them to quickly reset so they don't lose their first couple of days of vacation. So prepare beforehand. If you know you're going to be multiple time zones away, start to regulate your own circadian rhythm closer to the time zone that you're going to be in. So that would be one of the first things on vacation.
So how would I do that?
You look at the airplane, the airplane times, you look at the time you're leaving, you set your meals, you start changing your meal times around, you start changing your bed times, you start changing your wake times closer to, you're not going to be able to change 10 hours, but you can certainly start to change a couple of hours. And you try everything, assuming you arrive in the daylight and when it's morning or early afternoon, and you should be up for another 8 hours. So if you need to try to do what you can to sleep on an airplane, even if you need to take melatonin or some, sleep aid like that to actually be able to get a sleep, people say, I can't sleep on an airplane. Well, let's see if you can, get that. So that's really the first thing. Change your sleep time, wake time, daytime, and if necessary, take a sleep aid in order to fall. Now, that's for all that. Of course, there's people who are not leaving the country. They're just flying, maybe they're flying from the West Coast to, go to New York or go to Florida or go to the Caribbean, or they're going on a cruise or whatever, per se. So if it's only like 3 hours time difference, it's a minor adjustment, but still it's an adjustment that should be done. Maybe just one sachet of the Magnavers and one dose of the thyroid homeopathic would be sufficient in that case. If you've flown a long distance, especially to Europe or going the other way to Japan or Australia, you're probably going to need to do that regime for a couple of days. Once you're there, allow your circadian rhythm to reset itself. And once you're in that circadian rhythm, whereas you do the reverse when you come home, it's the same thing, because now you're going to be changing it. Well, if you fly from Australia, you often will arrive home before you leave because of the fact you're in a different day, mainly the night, and then you arrive the same day, but you arrive in the middle of the afternoon. But that's a whole other issue. So that's one of the more complicated ones. We'll talk about the more stay near home type vacation issues, or not just vacation, but summer issues. What happens in the summer? Your kids are home. Do they stay on the same routine? Do they still more or less go to bed at the same time? Do they stay up later because there's more daylight? The answer usually is yes. And then, when you get towards the end of the summer and you start looking at the idea of comparing back to school, then the last week or two, you start to shift them back to their school hours. But I still think it's for health reasons. The more you can stay on the same schedule, 365, 7 days a week, the better it is health-wise, because your nervous system and your endocrine system are forever thankful in that type of a scenario.
I'm going to back up a little second. You said thyroid homeopathic. Is there one in particular that you recommend? Because I know you can get the homeopathics that we're talking about are the little pellets, correct?
Pellets.
Correct. Right. So people that are not familiar, you can usually get those from your health food store. So like in Canada, we usually have them at like Goodness Me or Whole Foods, or Shoppers sometimes carries it. But is there one in particular that you would recommend?
Now, just it's only going to be homeopathic. So, okay. Whatever the homeopathic, if they have a 6C, take that. If they have 30C, take that.
At Zaire's, they actually have a panel, like at the grocery store, they actually have a panel that tells you to look for the thyroid one. So something, and then the other thing I wanted to mention when you're traveling a long time, like for circadian rhythm reset, something that I learned a long time ago, someone who talks about it all the time is Andrew Huberman, and he talks about sunlight. Sunlight is one of the main ways on how you can reset your circadian rhythm. Like I know you talked about, like in the summer, it's longer days. And so, I'm trying to go to bed at the same time. But if you're going to be traveling, 10 hours or, traveling multiple time zones, it would be prudent to expose your eyes to more light for different times. If you're, you know, try to set yourself that self, set yourself up that way. So you can use like happy light or a different type of lights. We've talked about photomodulation and light therapy in past podcasts, but sunlight is an extremely powerful way to help you shift your circadian rhythm. So if you know it's dark where you're going, you should start dimming the lights, like turn down those overhead lights. So when the lights are on, turn them down and like only use like lamps that are eyeline or on little tables or whatnot. So that can help, you know, reset your circadian rhythm as well. I just wanted to add those two things in terms of like use light, use the Magnavers and thyroid, right? For the long,
right.
For the multiple time zones. So I'm actually planning a trip. We're going to be driving to the East Coast. I don't think I told you that, but we decided we're going to finally do it. I know you did it for your honeymoon, right? You traveled, you did the East Coast. You drove the East Coast in the rain.
You did it in the rain.
In the rain. So hopefully it's not raining for us. But what about, I know you kind of talked about, but so for us doing, we're not, I mean, it's a couple hours difference time zone. So should I still be doing the Magnavers if I'm doing a road trip East?
Well, since you're driving, you're actually, it's really plane flights because driving's like, yeah, you could theoretically get there in a day, but it's not going to make that much difference because, you know, you may drive through one time zone,
right?
You know, in one your first day, and you know it's at a, you know, the second time zone the next day, so that it's easy to do it. It's like, you know, changing the clocks. You know, you see how you have to adapt with, you know, at spring forward, fall back type scenario. So that's not that big a deal when it's driving. You know, unless you're a truck driver and drive 24 hours and have two alternate drivers, or you're in one of those new trucks that drive by themselves. So it's like, you don't even need a driver. that point in time.
Okay. So this is more for flying then?
It's really airplane flight. Long distances, more than, we'll say, 5 hours. That's the first thing. But no matter what, when you do go on vacation, if you are going, you should try and get to your final destination. What is that time zone that you're in? Should try and regulate those hours. I think that's the blind spot in regards to that. And prepare beforehand. Don't wait till you get there to try and adjust. Will make it much easier, and you'll enjoy it much more when you do that.
Absolutely. Because just a side story is that I have a client who lives in San Francisco. She just flew to London. She went to the UK and then she's going to Ireland. So she felt a big difference. So it was like she hopped a few time zones. So, you know, we talked about what she had to do. When she got there, she was a little bit, her body wasn't feeling the best. So we talked about things that she could do to help feel safe. And so this would definitely be, these are things that will help you. It helped her. So these are real life things. So that's just for travel. So when we were preparing for this podcast, you talked about supplementation. In the summer, should I be adjusting my supplementation in any way, shape, or form?
You know, generally speaking, if you're going on vacation and going away, it's a bit of a nuisance to, you know, take, I mean, depending what it is that you're doing. There's always a couple of things that I think, even on vacation, it's a good idea. And just even if not going on vacation, what people often have done, if they're taking vitamin D, which is one of my staple ones, because even if you live in a place like I do in Arizona, where it's sunny 300 plus days a year, we're not out in the middle of summer. In fact, you hardly see your neighbor because it's, you know, it's 112 degrees Fahrenheit at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You don't go outside. So people tend to be, you know, from before 10 o'clock and after 7 o'clock, which is not when you're going to be getting much sun, even though it's sunny. So, you know, it was common that people would stop taking vitamin D in the summer. In fact, that's what I used to recommend until testing dozens of people and saying, God, your vitamin D drops, you know, from the spring to the fall, your vitamin D goes down. So I decided vitamin D is the type of thing should be taken all the time. If you're only, and the length of time you're going is also a factor. If you're going for a week or 10 days, other than maybe taking a probiotic, you probably don't much. You can take a holiday, take a supplement holiday. But if you're going to Europe, like your mom and I are for a month this summer, it's like that's a little bit longer. So, you know, we take, you know, the basic type things, you know, some B vitamins, a little bit of immune support, a little bit of digestive support, and, you know, probiotic are the types of things that that typically, and, you know, if your minerals are always a good idea, multi-minerals, especially if you're going to be doing a lot of hiking and traveling and walking that you're not used to, your muscles may tend to be a little bit sore otherwise. So also always something like your, you know, magnesium, specifically potassium magnesium or calcium magnesium supplement is a general idea, but you can take a supplement holiday that will say if it's, you know, 1 to 2 weeks. Longer than that, a patient yesterday was actually going to Mexico for 2 months. And I said, man, I can't take a holiday that long. So we trimmed down her sort of everyday things that she was doing to just 4 or 5 things that, you know, just put them in baggies. You don't take the bottles, just sort of count it out for the number of days. And, you know, just, you know, it's, so it's easy that way, I would say. But if for even if you're staying home though, you know, maybe you take, you may reduce, you know, to once a day instead of twice a day, or that probably needs a specific recommendation from the person who recommended the specifics for you to say, yeah, these are the things that you should take a break from. So in the summer, people are generally happier. Their food is lighter. They tend to eat lighter meals, not as heavy meals, et cetera. So, you know, you put all those things in a factor. And when you first think this thing with vacation is, where do you eat? Where do you get food? What snacks do you take? So if you're driving, it's easy. You can load up and use a cooler and have those available, as opposed to, you know, stopping at a gas station. You have to fill up your car in order to, you know, find healthier choices that you obviously could have around your house. So that would be one of the things to consider.
Yeah. In March break, we drove to Myrtle Beach and, you know, we went to Costco. We loaded up there because they're familiar foods. So, you know, you find the places that you know, and, you know, it's instead of, like a lot of people know, when you travel, the food tends to be a little bit saltier. So, you know, you have to address like your hydration levels, which actually my question when you talk about supplementation is electrolytes. Do you recommend electrolytes during the summer because, you know, it's hotter? We don't get to 112 Fahrenheit, but I mean, it does get warmer here, but people sweat more and, you know, maybe are drinking a little bit more. So do you recommend, you know, increasing the water intake or even taking electrolytes so that we can get our minerals in?
Well, the general rule of thumb, of course, regardless of the season, is have your body weight in ounces. So 150 pounds is 75 ounces, 200 pounds is 100 ounces. And that's more.
Wait, hold on. I got a question for you because one of my clients brought this up. What happens if you're 250 pounds or heavier?
Then you're supposed to do 125 ounces of water.
That's a lot of water.
Yeah, I know. It's like a gallon.
That's a lot of water. So they're supposed to do that. So where's the point? So just to like side note here. So a side note, is it possible to drink too much water?
Yes, it is. You can. Polydipsia is actually a medical condition where you actually overhydrate. And, you know, with the testing we do in the office, we're able to see whether somebody is overhydrated. And especially patients who have a health awareness, it's not uncommon that they may indeed be overhydrated.
Right.
You know, for what it is that they're doing, because, oh, a little bit is good, a lot more must be better. No, it's not, because, you know, typically women are between 50 and 55% hydrated. Men are, we'll say, 58 to 63% hydrated is sort of the ideal. And that's not with doing outdoor activities. That's not with playing a sport. You know, that's not with running around, being in the sun, where you're actually going to have to increase that amount of water even over and above your everyday metabolic requirement. So yes, you do need more water in the summertime, especially if you're outside. And electrolytes are something that are recommended year round.
Okay.
And more so even, so if you are doing an activity outside in the sun and are sweating more, even more so, you need to add more electrolytes. Typically, I use a liquid electrolyte. And we just put a couple of tablespoons in a water bottle a couple of times a day, which, you know, is sort of adequate. But, you know, if you're drinking more water, hopefully out of a, you know, out of a container, or if it's out of a glass, then just puts up maybe, you know, 2 teaspoons as opposed to 2 tablespoons in the glass, as opposed to a, you know, 20 or 4 or 32 ounce. Absolutely. Electrolytes, I think, are probably the most common deficiency in our society that people do, because, you know, every study that's been has been done has ultimately been shown to have a deficiency of at least one mineral, in society. So yeah, it's a pretty important aspect of what you need to be doing on a regular basis.
So that's one you don't skip. So you keep that part of the routine. Electrolytes, yeah.
Vacation is no opportunity to drink less and to avoid minerals, especially. So, which is typically what it is that, you know, you're going to be doing. So, no.
Right.
That doesn't change 365. It's the same recommendation all the time.
Another side note, though, with the mineral, do you know any common, like, household ways to know if you're deficient in certain minerals? I remember taking a nutrition, I was at a conference, and there's like these different ways to test, like, so for instance, if you're iodine, so it was, you get, you know, some iodine at the health food store and you put it on your wrist and you just put like a swab on it and you wait. And then if it disappears within 24 hours, that means you're iodine deficient. So that swab right there, all you do is you keep swabbing it. That was a test, like I did that years ago. So no, don't
that
do that.
Does that work?
No.
Don't do that.
Okay. All right, well, good to know.
That's one of those, in my opinion, that's one of those myth tests.
Sure.
It's like, oh, somebody said do that because they wanted people to start taking iodine.
Right.
So then they started taking iodine, and these people developed hyperthyroid because they were getting too much iodine. So,
right.
Okay, so for what you get, you pay a huge price if you overdo it, which is sort of the typical aspect for lots of people. They tend to overdo. There is really no really good test.
No,
I would say certainly not like that. The test virtually any mineral that I know of, short of a blood test, short of an intracellular looking at the minerals that get inside your cell, that requires, unfortunately, a professional test, a blood test, right. If you like, well, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. Well, because I remember going to your clinic and we did, I don't know, I did so many tests at your clinic, but one of the tests showed that I had more water on the outside of my cells than inside of my cells. So I wasn't absorbing the water. And that's showing I have a, you know, mineral deficiency, right? So that's why I'm like, I'm drinking a lot of water, but my body's not absorbing it. So that's where there's an imbalance, right? So that's something, you know, some people are like, I'm peeing all the time. I'm drinking lots and I'm peeing all the time. Well, it sounds like your body's not absorbing the water that it needs. So go get a blood test is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the sure sign that you probably are lacking minerals. That's the perfect stuff. If you feel that you drink and have to pee, you're probably all missing minerals. The easiest way to try it is find an electrolyte. And, you know, and once again, I prefer using colloidal minerals as an electrolyte as opposed to an electrolyte powder that you mix in there, which is fine. And maybe for somebody who's doing a heavy workout and sweating a lot, or, you know, playing soccer or, you know, whatever, football or baseball in the summertime, that would be helpful. But on an everyday basis, doing colloidal minerals, which are simply meaning they're easier to absorb, they're mixed in the water, is a simple solution to that. And, you know, even if push comes to shove, if you don't have that in water, if you take a lemon, literally just squeeze half a lemon.
Yep.
That will give you some minerals in addition to some vitamins. Is a at home thing that is not a bad idea. I'm not a fan, however, of juicing 10 oranges and drinking orange juice. If you want to drink orange juice, eat the orange and make the juice yourself with your teeth and chew on it.
Right.
That'll make the juice. Don't drink orange juice or any juice for that matter. Because I feel that you're missing the most important part that the fruit has. So eat the whole fruit is the best way to get nutrients, minerals specifically from those. And dietary wise, of course, what we're talking about is colors. The more colors of fruit and vegetables that you eat, the greater the variety, the greater the likelihood that minerals will not be an issue. or much less of possibility of an issue. So go there, lots of crawlers. On vacation, that becomes an important component. So, you know, when you're looking at meals, still try it, you know, just so we say, with water. And the fact that you are on vacation doesn't mean you should be eating fewer colors of fruits or vegetables, which is, that's a 365 rule also.
Right. Okay. And then just to add on, what's your take on adding like Himalayan sea salt or Celtic salts to the water?
If you're going to use salt, Celtic salt, Himalayan salt, sea salt, I mean, that obviously isn't preferred versus table salt, which is just straight sodium chloride. When you have Himalayan, Celtic, sea salt, you're looking probably at 75 trace minerals that are in tiny amounts, but that's what's in these types of substances. So if somebody prefers to add salt to food, that obviously is much preferred type of salt to include. So that should be really the only, unless, you know, somebody has high blood pressure, you know, they're basically told to use white salt, which is, instead of being sodium chloride, is potassium chloride, which, you know, is better, but it's still better to use the Himalayan, Celtic, or sea salt, you know, those types of things.
Even with colored, high blood pressure. You want colored salts. You don't get the white stuff. Get the colored stuff. It's better, right?
There you go.
Okay. So let's shift gears. Like for me, I have a cottage in Muskoka, Ontario. And if you know anything about Muskoka, Ontario, the mosquitoes are sides of birds. And so when we go up, like we're getting close to that season. How do I take care of myself if I get, you know, a whole bunch of bug bites and, you know, there's a lot of tick bites. It's really popular now here. They're always talking about what you can do to prevent all the different type of tick bites and whatnot. So what are your recommendations? What are your recommendations for that? My mom just poked her head in. I said, hi, mom, while we're recording. Anyway, so what are your recommendations to help protect my skin in particular during the summer?
Well, the one thing I recommend you don't do is spray yourself full of chemicals.
Yes.
Because, you know, that's the common thing. Or use DEET or use one of these harsh chemicals, and especially spray them on kids that are, your skin is highly porous, highly susceptible. Don't think that any of that, anything you put on your skin stays on your skin. It ends up internally. And when we're using chemicals, that's a big, big no-no. Right. So if you want to use something, you know, externally, aromatherapy, essential oils can be specifically, and I'm going to name a specific product that I think is one of the best things you could do. It's called Solvarum. S-O-L-V-O-R, and you'll have to buy that from a clinic. Maybe you can buy it, you know, from health food store, I don't know. But anyway, Solvarum is a mix of some essential oils of aromatherapy that have been shown to be highly protective of bug bites, or if you get a, you get mosquito bites or a spider bite, or snake bites for that matter, where I have in Arizona.
Right.
In addition to getting, you know, anti-venom, especially if it's a rattlesnake in this part of the world where I am in general. So the Solvarum is basically diluted. Yeah, you put like 20 drops in a pint bottle, an atomizer bottle, and if you want to spray on your kids to prevent bugs, that's what you do. And if you have a, you know, a bite of some type, you can just put some on a cotton pad or a cotton ball and dab it on the area. Found that to be incredibly helpful and incredibly effective for those types of issues and those types of problems. Find something, and if you can't find that, find something that's, I'll say, natural, and it's going to be more expensive probably than the chemical stuff, but at least it's not going to harm you. Especially if, you know, so I see always people on vacation and they're spraying their kids with, you know, this insect repellent.
Toxic stuff.
And toxic stuff that's called sunscreen. It's like, really? We're using sunscreen? Why do we have to use a toxic substance? And, you know, you probably remember, I think it was last year, that a bunch of those compounds were, those products were recalled because of the level of toxicity that's associated with them. So when they say, oh my God, you're telling me I shouldn't use sunscreen? And yet every ad on television says, oh, put sunscreen on because it's protecting. The whole thing with the skin is to never get a sunburn. You know, what we see, of course, where I am is, you know, not so much in the summer because people don't come here in the summer. They come here, you know, the snowbirds come sort of between, you know, November and April. And, you know, with the sun here 300 plus days a year, they lie in the sun for 8 hours. Oh, well, when I go home, my skin will be nicely tan. Yeah, and you will just have fried your skin too. That's not a good idea. So the goal is, if you want to be out in the sun, cover your head, cover your eyes if you like, or use a wear big brim per se, hat, that I think is important. I think it's important all the time in general. So you can use, there are natural agents that you can put on your skin if you feel so necessary. But as soon as your skin starts getting a bit of a rosy hue, you're done for the day. You do not want to continue to expose the skin. You don't want to become looking like a lobster where the skin is totally red and you sort of walk around because now you're sore because you basically have burnt the skin. That is what the danger is. The danger is burning the skin and causing years later potentially some type of an irreparable damage to the skin. And it's not something that happens because you had a sunburn. It's something that happens over time. There are natural agents, ask your physician or go to a health food store or a natural store like that, or look for this product called Solboro that I think is amazing.
Well, the product that we tend to use is called Sunbum. It's more expensive, mind you. And
it is going to be more expensive, definitely.
Yeah, it's definitely more expensive. Like all of my, I'm paying closer to $20 for a bottle of sunscreen because I don't have all the chemicals. But something that personally, because I, live in the land of large mosquitoes and bug bites and stuff, I make my own bug spray. So if you are interested in making it, all you need is 2 ounces of distilled water, 2 ounces of witch hazel. And then you're going to add about 20 to 25 drops of essential oils if you have children under 3, or you can add up to 40 to 50 drops if you have kids over the age of 10. So tea tree oil is a really popular one, eucalyptus, and you can make your own mixes. So I make each of my children their own bottle and they carry it around with them when they go to camps and stuff like that. Super, super easy. Make sure you do it in a glass bottle, right? Because it's a dark, you want a darker bottle, and we want to make sure that it doesn't, what's the word I'm looking for? Doesn't get rancid. So anyway, super easy to do. And it's so much more effective than, like my dad said, do not put DEET on your body. do not put DEET on your body. It is so toxic and so harmful to your skin, but also to your organs. Your body's going to absorb that stuff. And so in our last podcast, we talked about cancer. So you want to talk about that cumulative effect of putting toxins on your body. That's a problem. So there are things that, to look out for. And Dad, do you know what the main ingredient we want to avoid in sunscreen is?
Anything that is a word you can't pronounce.
Okay, there you go.
If you can't pronounce it, don't put it on your body.
That's good. I've been teaching my kids that for food. They're like, Mommy, can I eat this? Can you pronounce those words? No, then don't eat it. Straight up. It's been great. They're like, we can't eat anything in this house. I'm like, yeah, you can. You choose not to. So there you go. Okay. Any other first aid things that you recommend? So let's say I do get sunburned. Okay. Let's say, my skin got a little crispy, or I did get some bites, or I did fall. Let's say I fell. I fell and I scraped my knee. I know the answer, but what do you suggest that we use to support ourselves? And what are there any products that you'd recommend?
Well, certainly I'm going to go back to Solboril again. Solboril is virtually good for any type of, I'll say, lesion on the skin. But to have that, everybody should have in their first aid kit homeopathic arnica. Arnica is the number one first aid injury for sprains, strange injuries, bruising. Anything like that. And it's and if you think, should I use it or not, use it. It'll either help or it'll do nothing. It won't be harmful. So theoretically, even if you swallowed the whole capsule, you know, or the whole things of 120 pellets, what you'd do is that if it's a baby or something, what you've done is you'd give them a huge sugar load from the lactose pellets that are where the remedy is. But generally speaking, homeopathic remedies, sort of reasonable 12C, whether it's like 12C or 15C or 30C or 6C, which is all you need for a first aid kit. You don't need to go into the higher strengths, right, which is for other uses. That's more for professionals. So go to the health food store, find the lower potencies of arnica, and you should always have arnica in your at-home kit. And, you know, if your son or daughter or kids or you fall down and, you know, sprain your wrist or sprain your ankle, in addition to doing hydrotherapy, alternating hot and cold on any type of an injury, you break your left arm, you do the alternating hot and cold on the right arm. If you blow up your foot or ankle or leg, you know, you do the hydrotherapy on the opposite leg by doing that. So there's always hydrotherapy that should be done for any type of an acute injury, whether it's a sprain, strain, or anything like that. So arnica and hydrotherapy are easily done, easily have in your first aid home kit, you know, to be utilized. And once again, if you have an injury, you know, give it to your child or son or daughter, whatever, and it won't hurt. You're not going to have a problem. Well, if it's not the right remedy, it does nothing. If it's the right remedy, you'll be very pleasantly surprised how quickly it could be helpful for that particular problem. In fact, just a story about your mother, or Julie. You know, when Eric was probably 5 or something, we're playing in the backyard and we were playing T-ball or something. And the next door neighbor, you know, swung the bat, and Eric happened to decide that he was going to go and get the ball at that same moment. And the neighbor swung the bat around. It's a plastic bat, mind you. And he hit him right in the cheek, right in the face. He, you know, fell down, obviously, and was crying. And I said, oh, I know what's going to help him. And I just went and got some arnica. You know, he's crying, so his mouth's open. It was easy to put it in his mouth. And literally, he didn't get a black or blue. It didn't get a black eye. I was like, wow, this stuff really works. So there's no harm in giving it that type of a thing. And, you know, that's, is Eric 40-something years old now? So
yep.
That's a long time ago that you know, that was. And it wasn't my first experience with homeopathy, because I'm using it for over 40 years in general. So it's, I mean, homeopathy has the potential in acute injuries like that to provide, you know, potential great benefits. And if you have some interest in it, there actually is books that are written, I'm sure you could find on Amazon, like, you know, homeopathic first aid, and you can get, you know, 5 or 6 of the common ones, you know, whether it's a burn or a scald or a cut or a wounds, sprain, strain. There's very common remedies that are safe to be used and more potency over the counter.
Absolutely. My kids call it boo-boo medicine. So whenever you get any kind of, so if your kid's like, I got a boo-boo, get your arnica out, people. It's super simple, you know, 2-3 pellets in the pack. Like, you know, anytime you hear a bang or a thud or anything, you get out the boo-boo. Like, the kids know. Hydrotherapy is amazing. We've talked about lots of that in our past podcasts. Calendula is another one you didn't mention, but that one is for cuts. Really good if you have any like cracks in the skin and whatnot, calendula. And also aloe, basic, you know, get your aloe plant out, you know, like they're everywhere. Put that on the skin because the skin loves it.
Aloe is definitely one of those for the burn. I mean, aloe is very soothing. You can buy aloe vera, not only with plant and have the fresh plant, and just break the leaf off, and you have the mucus, the thick gel that apply. But you can buy aloe at the store, and it's a great thing to have around for the summer, because if you do happen to go beyond just the bright redding, the red of the skin, and it's more uncomfortable, and you really want to do it. Don't put cortisone on your skin at any time, because that doesn't treat anything. Push it deeper into your body and ultimately produce a more serious problem.
Right. And then also, like with arnica, they actually have creams for it now. So it's just, you know, it's becoming more popular. So it's funny. Like, I mean, I, like, as you said, like, I was raised on Arnica. We never had Advil in the house ever. So I didn't know what Advil was until I became an adult, because I always had Arnica. And then you ask people, like, do you use Arnica? I have no idea what you're talking about. So let's hopefully now more people will know about Arnica and its amazing healing properties for sure. All right. Is there anything else that we should know to help us prepare for summer? So we basically, if we traveled time zones, you got your Magnelivers, your thyroid, homeopathics, supplements. It depends on if you're, you know, going, if you're leaving for more than 2 weeks at a time, you should, you know, stick with your supplement routine. Hydration is super important, but get your electrolytes in 365 all the time. Routine, try to stick to it as much as possible. Like my dad said, for sleep, in terms of try to go to bed at the same time if you, you know, if you can, even though the days are longer and whatnot. Stress, the stress of planning, we didn't really dive into that too much, man, because the stress levels change. Your nervous system, like summertime, it's more relaxing, right? It's just when the sun comes out, it's like, you know, it releases feel-good hormones. Just, you feel better. It's been raining. Like, Mother Nature is really funny. So in April, she had 1 week of like beautiful weather for us. And then the temperature dropped. It was like in the mid 25 to 30s. So it was hot. So we got to like experience summer for a week, one full week. And then she's like, haha, I'm just joking. And then she dropped it down to like zero. It's been like raining and miserable. And it's incredible how stressful that is on the body. So in particular, like my son, it was really hard on his body. So I know, Dad, you know that has issues with his knuckles. Like when he gets really stressed out, the weather extremely stresses him out. So we've been talking about, you know, the stress on his gut. He needs some gut health and, yeah, like trying to stay on routine and all these type of things. What tips do you have in terms of helping manage our stress when there's these ups and downs? Like right now it's springtime, but summer it's, you know, a little bit more consistent. But do you have any tips in terms of how we can manage our stress when we're in it?
Well, I think the realization, you know, that becomes a bigger discussion, but that is the simple aspect of not to wait until, you know, there's a circumstance or a situation, which is why we've always harped on, you know, the basic treatment guidelines, because you don't wait till, you know, something is broken to try and fix it. What we're trying to do is true prevention. And the best way to prevent, you know, the aspects of, you know, that summer isn't here yet, the weather is going to change. So we have to stay with our BTGs. We have to stay with our routine. We have to stay with taking our healthy probiotics and the diet aspect of things. The body doesn't know that the weather has changed as a stress any more than it does that you went to bed inconsistent hours, any more than it doesn't know that when you get up in the morning, you're about to stress yourself. So, which nobody considers those to be of any consequence. So the aspect of relaxation, of course, deep breathing, things you always talked about, all the vagus nerve activity things, which are all about parasympathetic. So we can even teach our kids to splash cold water on their face and to hum and to sing and to give you, three or four hums a day to release oxytocin. You know, all those types of things that we can easily teach our kids to do and ourselves to do that are an important aspect to keep calming and releasing that feel-good hormone. And yes, the sun makes a big difference, and that's a mental-emotional stress. And mental emotional stress isn't any different than physical stress. So when Selye did his work almost 100 years ago, you know, he found that people went to five weddings, five funerals. There wasn't any physiologic difference. So it was the mental thing that was different. But the stress response was exactly the same. So how you interpret things, which is, you know, the whole idea of meditation and affirmations, and give thanks and say prayers, are all positive feedback to your nervous system to say, it's okay. It's going to be okay. We do our best, you know, and, you know, it's unfortunate that more so in the United States and certainly in Canada, the number of tragedies that happen in this country, especially related to gun violence, is astounding. There's something like over 170 already in only entering May. That means more than three people unfortunately lost their life through gun violence, totally unnecessarily. And the amount of stress that that puts on every survivor, the amount of stress it puts on people who watch it, and saw it, et cetera, it's pretty astounding and will be a lifelong trauma. Of course, that's what I address in my book, Begin Again. So we need to be mindful that, the weather's going to change. We can't change it. You know, you may live in an area where there's tornadoes. You may live in an area where there's hurricanes. You know, we live in an area of monsoons, which is relatively speaking, is pretty mild relative to what the rest of the country does in general. However, we know it's coming. We know it's a bit of an inconvenience. And we know the trauma, the tragedy that is associated with that. You always hope, well, hopefully it's not me, however it may be. And what are you going to do? How are you going to cope with it? So it's about coping. It's learning coping skills. It's doing BTGs every day, which are some of the best coping skills you could ever do.
And I think that's a great point, because that's what happened when Caleb's hand got all chapped up. It was a conversation of you haven't been doing your basic treatment guidelines. So it was a nice reminder to him that he fell off track, taking his probiotic and doing his hydrotherapy. And he knows all these things. He's only 12, but he knows these things already. And so it was a nice reminder for him that, hey, I need to take, a step back and, take care of myself again. And, if you do have a flare up, if you have IBS or if you have migraines and whatnot, and you're getting these flare ups during the summer, like, you're right, Dad, it's all about perception of stress, right? Your body doesn't necessarily know if it's emotional, physical, social, spiritual, mental, whatever. It's stress is stress, but it's your perception of it. And so if you are getting these flare ups and if you are getting these symptoms that creep up on you, use that as a red flag on the play, and that you're like, oh, what do I need to go back to? Go back to my basic treatment guidelines. Get my sunlight in, do my deep breathing. And so if you want meditations, I'm really excited to let you know, I just recorded a couple of them, and I have a friend of mine who's going to be creating the music for it. So those will be available on my YouTube site soon. So if you want, if you're used to listening to me, so that's the thing with meditation, is that a lot of times people have a difficult time meditating. And sometimes it's because the reason you don't feel safe, you don't like doing meditation, is because you don't feel safe slowing down. But what I've learned is that if you're familiar with the person speaking, if you feel safe with them, so if you're used to listening to me, listening to a meditation from me may be more safe, and you may be more likely to meditate. So just something that to throw out there, I do actually have a couple meditative music. So I'm teaching a masterclass tonight, actually. And I'm really excited because it's all about listening to music and how music shifts your nervous system. So, we're going to be playing all these different types of music so you can actually understand how sound can influence you. So if you are looking for little, like my dad's saying, parasympathetic snacks, it's available to you. There's information there. Just go to my YouTube and, there's breathing drills and vagus nerve exercises galore. But, go put your feet in grass. So I actually had an Instagram video that just went viral, and I'm grateful for it. But the ironic part of the whole thing is I'm doing eye drills. I'm doing some very basic bilateral stimulation exercises. But the key of the entire video is I'm standing in the river. I'm grounding myself while I'm doing this exercise. That's the most important part. And some people caught it. Many people didn't. They're so caught up on, me doing the eye drills and all that kind of stuff. And that looks like EMDR. And I kind of do this naturally. And I was doing some fun brain gym exercises and whatnot with it. But at the end of the day, it was about grounding. It was really about grounding myself. And that's what the video was about. And so those people that caught it, I'm like, you're my people. If you saw that video and you're like, oh my God, she's standing in the water. And do I have to? You're my people, because you're thinking. Now you're thinking ahead, because it's really about shifting that energy. You are energy. We are electromagnetic beings. So when we can shift that energy, you can do so many amazing, wonderful things. And that's, this whole topic of getting you ready for summer. Yes, there's a shift in your routine, but if you focus on the basic things and ground yourself, you're going to have a great summer, right? It's going to be
good. That's the goal.
That's going to be good times.
Enjoy your vacation, because we all deserve it. And, you know, interestingly, in this continent versus the European continent, people take vacations much more seriously, and, you know, they're not as much of a workaholic in general over there. And having traveled there last summer, of course, you see them take breaks, and that's part of their day. They have built it in to their stress management. And I think my guess is that part of that is because of how they needed to, because of how they've survived. Because when you go back 500 years or 1,000 years of the history of these countries, you'll see for 100 years they were ruled by one group of people, and then somebody else came in and took them over. That was a new group of people. And every 100 or, you know, sometimes less or more, you know, it would be a different group of people. And they had to learn how to cope to survive. And how they've done that is to take reasonable breaks to, you know, shut down their computer at 5 o'clock and not think they have to do it till 10 o'clock at night. And, you know, they have Sunday family gatherings. They have Sunday family meetings. And, you know, they do a lot of things, you know, well. What I wish would happen in Europe is somebody would tell them that smoking is not good for you, because over there it's like a friggin' chimney everywhere you go, because it seems that they haven't got the message that that's one of their stress relievers. But of course, that's just my total bias, and I apologize for anybody who, you know, maybe not like that government. But wonder if you haven't been to Europe, plan on and put it on your bucket list. There's so much great things to see over there.
Absolutely. And the thing too is, like, they do live a different lifestyle. Like, the reality is, like, they get like 6 to 8 weeks. I mean, like, Spain takes the whole month of August off, you know, like a lot of people, like, in, I think in Italy, I think they only work like, I think it's 11 or 10 months a year. So they get like 8 weeks off. So they're used to doing that, right? And that's the reality of their lives, where, you know, North America, you're lucky if you get 2 weeks. You're really lucky. And, you know, like, I mean, that's a whole different podcast at the end of the day, right? You look at, you know, mothers only getting like 4 weeks with their babies. I'm like, what is that? Like, that's just no, just wrong. So anyway, I mean, that's where we have to, the system is broken, and we've talked about that before. But at the end of the day, you can do what you can, you know, enjoy if you have a week off this summer, even if it is with your kids, because we know it's stressful. Like, I have my kids all summer long. Good times, good times. But you make the best of it, right? At the end of the day, is have fun.
That's right.
Because so many people struggle having fun. So what can you do to have fun? So that's why, you know, like I did a road trip. We went to Myrtle Beach at spring break. And it was, I mean, the last few trips that I've taken with my family have been very, I'm going to call it feminine. Feminine in the sense of, it was very loosely planned. We knew we were going to Myrtle Beach. We didn't know what we were going to do when we were to go there. We knew we were staying. We didn't know where we were going to stay on the way. So we just like drove, and then, you know, we're like, yep, this is a good town to stop in. So we did. So it was very much like go with the flow. And it, you know, it really decreased my stress load. Like, I noticed how much easier it was for me to just, you know, get right into my vacation mode. Cause, you know, you hear this all the time. People go on vacation and they get back and they need a vacation from their vacation because of, you know, the stress and whatnot. So you hear that a lot. So you don't want that, right? You know, like we talk about, you know, I really need 10 days, you know, like I've traveled, like, I'm jealous of my parents. They usually travel for at least 2 weeks, you know, at a time. And it's because, like, you know, it takes a few days to settle in, right? But if you're preparing for it, you know, you can get right into it. So, you know, enjoy your time while you're there. So you're not like, oh my God, you're still jittering from all the planning and stuff. If you're like me and you plan, you know, it takes you a week to pack 5 people for a trip. It's like, it can get stressful. But, you know, once you get into it, you know the things, you know, to go, what's that cream again? Solverome. How come is this the first time I ever heard of it? You've never told me about this before.
I don't know.
Oh, anyway, I have some bum. That's what we use. But, you know, at the end of the day. Oh, actually, one thing with the sun, because I know you have an opinion on this one. Sunglasses. What's your opinion on sunglasses?
Well, it's a popular thing for people to wear, but, you know, in my life, I have never worn sunglasses, but I do wear a hat. I wear a hat all the time. I always wear a hat 365 every time I go outside. Hat that I put on to go outside, even if it's cloudy. So what we're trying to do is prevent direct sunlight into the eye, especially on a bright sunny day, which is what sunglasses are doing, obviously, is to prevent that. But with using hat, in my case, I'm doing the same type thing. Sun, of course, is what will stimulate the pineal gland. And then, so, you know, we have dark, which is why one of the BTGs is sleeping in the dark, because that's what turns it on. Some turns it off, and sort of, it's like it's the fuel. It's the sun on, dark off, you know, that type of thing, the reverse rather, is how we stimulate the pineal gland. Pineal gland, remember, is not just something that produces melatonin. The pineal gland actually sets your entire circadian rhythm. And more importantly, that most people are not aware of, but actually is a huge influence on your immune system, which is why people have poor sleep, who have, you know, they think that just taking melatonin is the answer, but it's only one of the hormones that's produced by the pineal gland. Once again, the bigger component, the bigger function, that's even more essential than just melatonin, is the idea that it's an immune regulator and it's a circadian rhythm regulator, but more so than other of these organs that are in our head.
So it goes back to sunlight. It comes back to sunlight. You got to get the sun in your eyes. So, you know, maybe limit how long you wear your sunglasses, right? So like, I have to be careful. For instance, I actually have a freckle in the back of my eyeball. So my optometrist is like, I need to be careful of the light of the bright sun, because I'm a little bit more susceptible to things because of that. But something like, just take care of your eyes, but also know that, you know, wearing sunglasses, you could be impacting your circadian rhythm. So just, you know, we'll leave that there for where it is. All right. Is there anything else that you want to share, Dad?
No, we've wandered around on a bunch of topics. So, you know, yeah. As people listen to this, it's sort of, we started off on one, wandered into some others. Hopefully some useful tips with the summer coming up, no matter where you live, the part of the continent you live on or in the world you live on, for that matter. And, you know, the same rules apply. Be prepared. Try and keep your routine as much as possible. Prepare ahead of time, et cetera. Do your best. But more importantly, just go out and relax. You know, life doesn't have to be so worried about everything. You know, the best thing I did last year when I went on vacation is I turned my shawl off. So It was like, take a holiday. And I was like, it really is. If it's somebody really needs to get to you, have some type of an emergency way to get in touch. But it's not that important. Just figure, you know, turn your phone off.
Turn off the electronics.
Turn off the electronics. And that's probably the best vacation you could ever do. Mm-hmm. Is like, you don't have to, don't look at social media, you know, don't turn your computer on, you know, just forget it. You know, it's like the world won't end. You know, even as, you know, my patients, like, you know, they'd call the receptionist and say, he's not going to answer you because he's on vacation. And like, nobody died. Nobody is like, oh my God, like how are we going to survive? You're going to do just fine. Just take it easy. That's a pretty key thing for health. And we all need to do that occasionally. And so taking a break from electronics, not only on vacation, but anytime, once in a while, even if for half a day, if it's for nothing else, don't get up and immediately have to look at your phone.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked all about this in the last podcast, right? Yeah. Digital detox does the body good, right?
That's right.
Turn it off for the weekend or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, at the end of the day, try to have some fun, get some parasympathetic snacks into your, schedule them in if you have to, but enjoy your parasympathetic snacks. For our next podcast, we're actually going to dive into self-sabotage. And for those of you that struggle with motivation, like, you know what you need to do. You've been wanting to do the basic treatment guidelines and you're just like, something is blocking me. And so what we're going to do is dive into, why is your body not feeling safe enough for you to do the things that you know that are healthy for you? So we're going to dive into that next time. So we look forward to chatting with you then. In the meantime, you can follow us on you can follow us on YouTube, websites. Dad, do you have anything upcoming that people can check you out at?
Well, I'm about to do my seminar on the brain protocol for physicians. So hopefully within a couple of weeks, we'll have a lot more people around the country who will be able to guide you through, you know, dealing with past traumas, from people who read the book and say, wow, something that I think really applies to me.
Amazing. So yeah, so stay tuned for that stuff. But thank you so much for listening to us and supporting us. And we will talk to you next time.
Talk to you next time.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your energy from head to heart.
If this is your first time listening, we would love for you to subscribe to connect and grow with us in the coming weeks.
If you'd like what you've been hearing today, we encourage you to go wherever you're listening to leave a review. Tell us what you loved about the episode. Tell us which one was your favorite and share topics you would like us to talk about.
And if you're interested in learning more about biological medicine, go to my website, drdixontom.com.
And if you'd like to learn more about how to shift your nervous system and heal using movement, I encourage you to visit fitamize.ca to learn more. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you on the next episode.